welcome to this week's Pitching In NPL show. And this week it's a special show as we're joined now down the other end of the phone by the league chairman of the Northern Premier League. It's a welcome back to the show to Mark Harris. Well, Mark, a big thank you for joining us. And obviously there's a lot to discuss in this interview. But at the moment where we are in this week of January, what's it like at the moment being in charge of a Trident League?
Well, it's always been and continues to be a privilege to be chairman of a Trident League. You know, we are very much in limbo at the moment. As you know, the club's deadline for responding to the FA survey was only yesterday. It'll now take a week or so to chase up any stragglers, although why people wouldn't respond to a survey like that is somewhat beyond me. It'll then take probably another week on top of that to really, really understand and analyse the findings and the FA Alliance Committee on which the NPL is represented. We'll then get together with our fellow Trident Leagues. To be honest, the communication, though, despite the fact that we're not playing any football through factors beyond our control, that doesn't stop the fact that all three Trident Leagues, I speak two or three times a week with my colleagues, because there's also things, you know, that life doesn't just stop completely. There are things like rule changes for next year. We're working very hard to ensure continuation with our sponsors. So the work doesn't stop. It just isn't seen.
And with regards to what happens next, obviously, like you say, there's a process that the FA is going through at the moment with the clubs and that kind of thing. With regards to the league, we've put a marker down saying there's going to be no football at least until the week after March the 6th. Why that date in particular, and when did it become clear that that was basically the best we could hope for at this stage?
Okay, so the key thing to bear in mind is, although there's an awful lot of people out there who claim to have second sight and they might see that this should have been predicted and that should have been predicted. Unfortunately, when you're administering a league, you have to work on what we actually do know. So that's the starting point for that. The date of March the 6th was based on the point at which lockdown was introduced. And at the point lockdown was introduced, I think 100% of Isthmian League clubs, 95% of Southern League clubs and 83% of Northern Premier League clubs were already in Tier 4, so we couldn't play football anyway. But the point at which the lockdown came, you always try and give your clubs as much certainty as possible, but without painting yourselves into any corner. At that particular moment in time, the Prime Minister was talking in terms of the possibility of restrictions being relaxed probably around the middle part of February. He was promptly contradicted by several of his cabinet ministers over the course of the next 48 hours, no surprise there. But in reality, even if restrictions were to be relaxed by that time, and I have to say my own personal opinion, not the opinion necessarily of the Northern Premier League, I think it's highly unlikely. We also have to build in the fact that even if we were given a green light to play football towards the end of February, we need to give clubs at least 2 weeks for effectively a mini pre-season, which takes you to the 6th of March. So the 6th of March, at the point of that announcement, was probably the earliest date that we could consider. And again, nobody actually wants to actually terminate a season if it can be avoided, which is why the decision was made unanimously by the Trident Leagues to say, no, we'll postpone until that point. There's no rush to come to a conclusion on this. The vast majority of clubs have furloughed their players. So the furlough scheme runs till the end of April. Clubs will already have hunkered down in terms of heat, light and gas costs. Yes, there will still be costs attached to that. But really, the clubs have minimised their costs. So there's no massive hurry to come up with whichever way we want to go forward. But that was the reason for the 6th of March.
And obviously, towards the end of this interview, I'll come back to that date and what we can hope for after that, if at all possible. But I'd just like to go back to where we found ourselves at the turn of the year as well, because the NPL, it felt like we're trying the hardest to try and find a way of playing football. There has been a lot of mixed messages from government, and you know, I was speaking to managers in December, and there was still a hope that we could get some football played. But the league did set down some markers and say there's an option to play on this weekend. I think it was the 17th of December, if memory serves, and we'll be back on Boxing Day. Why did we go down that route of leaving it open for clubs to come back to action?
Well, to be honest, that's not really a question I can easily ask, because at that particular, when that decision was taken, I was lying in a hospital bed. I'm very much, what I'm about to say now is very much sort of third hand. I think the feeling at the time was that the board wanted to give clubs the opportunity to bring some revenue in and the opportunity to play football if they wanted to. Now, what then happened subsequent to that is a significant, not the majority of clubs, but a significant number of clubs then contacted the league to say that they disagreed with that decision. Now, you can look at this from two perspectives. Why did the league ostensibly change its mind? Well, one person's why don't you just stick to your other guns is somebody else's we're listening. And I don't see any shame whatsoever in actually saying a decision was made in good faith, as it was, by club representatives. The response then from a significant number of clubs asked for that decision to be reviewed, and it was. And as we said just a few moments ago, we are dealing with a situation that isn't changing weekly, it's changing daily. And government advice is changing, so it's extremely hard to forward plan. Ultimately, the decision to review that the original brought us closer back in line with the other Trident leagues as well.
And we should say, if someone from the FA or government was looking at this situation, they'd see that the Northern Premier League were trying to get football played, but obviously due to economics and health factors and that kind of thing, it's proved impossible, really. This point, shall we talk about what the alternatives were and if it was possible to mirror what the National League were doing before the rug was pulled under them with regards to grant funding and loan funding?
Yeah, by all
means. And the situation there, because that was a possibility that you know, if funding was available, we could carry on playing behind closed doors. But I mean, where are we up to with that side of things?
Okay. Let's just take a bit of a step back to the summer. And the National League's decision, which was entirely their prerogative, to press ahead with their playoffs was only possible by effectively aligning themselves with the elite game. Now, what that has done, and I'm sure it is an unintended consequence, as it's actually produced second-class citizens within the same National League system. So, as we all know, step three downwards is non-elite, step two and step one are elite. So where we started right the way back in September time, when we wanted to play football, and at that point, perhaps we can talk about this in a little while, we did actually put forward several Plan D, or Plan Bs, should I say, to NPL clubs. But the fundamental difference at the start was that at our level, we were allowed crowds, and initially, the National League was not. So at our level, after one practice game at the Phase 2 levels, we were allowed 600 fans at Step 3, our Prem Division, and 400 fans at Step 4, our First Divisions, Northwest and Southeast. Now, what then happened was that the National League were able to go and negotiate through actually the National Lottery some funding to actually make up for the fact they weren't getting any gate income at all. What then happened after that is that we were unable to admit fans. So ever since that point, we have been pressing government through the Department of Culture, Media and Sport for funding for our level of the game to make up for the fact that we haven't got gates. The National League have had that in the 3 months up to Christmas, but we've continued to push for funding. To cut straight to the chase, the barriers up to now have been the following. Firstly, that the DCMS were unwilling to grant us monies as a grant, but we're insisting on it being loans. Now, loans are neither use nor ornament to anybody at our level of the game, because I can't think of too many clubs right now that want to take on any further debt. The second barrier is that those monies were to be means tested. So what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is that clubs would have to almost demonstrate that they're on their knees to be able to draw down any funding. Now, I'm sure most of our clubs could demonstrate that, but what it also means is those clubs that are perhaps more prudently managed and those clubs who, through good husbandry, have been able to build up some financial resources would actually be financially disadvantaged. Where we are at as at today is that the terms of any finance are still being finalised. We are not yet in a position to confirm funding for our level of the game. There'll be a massive caveat to it that the level of finance available to clubs at step three and downwards isn't going to be in the same league as that received by clubs at step one and two. But right now, every bit helps.
And there'll be a few people thinking to themselves, well, if clubs have to demonstrate they're on the knees, then it's probably too late at that point, isn't it? But with regards to the funding that's hopeful, I mean, like you say, it's not in the same ballpark from what I can gather as the National League. So therefore, the funding is more just to keep clubs afloat rather than to finish the season.
Yeah, I think there's two key things for us to bear in mind. Firstly, the Treasury is now involved in this sort of thing. So clearly, Rishi Sunak's department is now having a very, very close look at how monies are distributed. Hence the statement from the DCMS relative to the National League that any monies there now are only available as loans. That's the first point. And the second point is, when you're dealing with government, it's not a negotiation. I'm sure there'll be a whole pile of people out there going, get me in front of them. I'm a great negotiator. Sit me in front of Rishi, and Rishi will go, tell you what, you have as much as you want. Life isn't like that. So it's a delicate negotiation, and I have to say, those at the Football Association who are leading this have done an absolutely outstanding and exemplary job. They've been tenacious, particularly in us pushing the case that we need to have grants rather than loans. And whilst whatever we wind up with, it's going to be far from perfect, but we're going to be in a better position than we were before Christmas. But the monies involved are not going to make the difference between a club saying, I want to carry on, and not. So there are several problems attached to it.
Economically, though, I'm thinking out loud here. I've not done the maths. With regards to how much will it cost to keep a club furloughed or play, subsidised with grant money, surely it's neither here nor there. The government is subsidising clubs now not to play football, essentially. Wouldn't it be cheaper for them to actually subsidise clubs to play football? And at least, even if it's behind closed doors and there's no catering, anything like that, at least there's, I hope we can get to the end of the season and football might be able to start in March with a decent availability of getting money in.
I think that assumes a number of things. And regardless of anyone's voting persuasion, in reality, the Department of Culture, Media and Sport is not a very strong voice within government. We've also got to face the fact that whilst we would all dearly, I'm sure we could all put together a case for why football should receive more direct funding, in reality, we are competing with gyms, with nail bars, with coffee shops, travel industry. Everybody across the piece can put an argument up to become a special case. And the risk is that if you become too strident and too militant in this, you know, nothing is achieved by failing to fulfil games. Nothing is achieved by haranguing government, because they just turn around and go, well, you're not having anything. So that isn't surrendering. That's taking a realistic approach that says, if it's a choice between something and nothing, I'm going to take the something. We're going to do, as we have done, and as I've mentioned through the Football Association, do absolutely everything to put our case to maximise what we get. We don't know what that's going to be as yet. I think the furlough scheme is something that applies to all employers. I mean, let's face it, it's the hospitality sector, which is in even more dire straits than the footballing sector, they're struggling to get any real support. And the longer the pandemic goes on, I suspect the harder it will be, because there will be louder and louder calls for it. And to be honest, I'm not an economist, but there's bound to be less and less in the pot.
And so that's the government avenue. There is, of course, you know, we're in January, it's transfer window time, and there's hundreds of millions of pounds being transferred left, right and centre from clubs at the top table. We've seen FC United in the FA Cup this year. We've seen Marine, Chorley, Stockport County, all making a splash. Is there not an argument here that there's enough money within football to make it sustainable at our level? It's just a case of, can it happen? Is it possible for it to happen?
Well, the argument over what is the right distribution of wealth in football has rumbled for some time. It will continue to rumble, and it's an absolutely fair argument. We would all argue in non-league, I certainly would, that we don't get a fair crack into it. We are the meat in the sandwich. But it's not entirely a black and white picture. Let's not forget that it's only back in September time that we actually did get some financial support for the very first time from the Premier League. Clubs at our level and throughout the NLS were able to draw down funds. Were they life-changing funds? No. But it was the first time it had ever happened. We've also got to bear in mind that everybody is hurting. And we've only got to look to the fact that Leeds United tried to take the Premier League to court because they discovered that as a result of the Premier League bailing out the, their words, not mine, bailing out the EFL, there was less money in the central funding at that level. It's a sad reality that most clubs, whether they are Liverpool Football Club or a club at Step 7, will always see finance from the perspective of self-interest. Now, the other thing we have to understand is that even the Football Association has suffered £300 million worth of losses as a result of COVID. They've got rid of 150 people. Now, I'm sure there'll be people out there going, the right thing to do. But it's meant that we've all had to take some of the pain. So some of the initiatives that we as a league might like to be mounting, we can't. I don't think non-league football does not have an inalienable right to extra money. There is a strong case that we need to look at the whole distribution of wealth in football, but there's a lot of mouths to feed and there's only so much money to go around. So where I'm at on this is the debate needs to be had. It absolutely needs to be had, and there needs to be transparency in and around what money's going to where. One thing I do know, Ben, you will never get agreement across stakeholders in football of what is the right way to divide the money. Absolutely not.
Sure. with regards to the FA, you mentioned earlier, you know, they should be praised for the work they've put in to try and negotiate a way through this. There's going to be a lot of listeners to this and a lot of supporters of non-league clubs who feel slightly aggrieved at what they perceive maybe as the FA turning a blind eye to the plight of non-league and stuff like that with regards to the null and voiding of last season, the potential null and voiding of this season. I mean, is there anything more that you feel the FA could have done, or what's your answer to those supporters who feel like the FA might have let this level of the game down, perhaps?
Well, last season is last season, and it's utterly pointless even going back on that. At that time, the view was that clubs needed to have as much certainty as possible. That was challenged. It's a matter of record that was challenged by a number of clubs. It should be said that the proportion of clubs who did mount that legal challenge in the NPL was relatively small. The difficulty when you run a league is very often that you wind up having to go for the least bad solution, because you will never, ever find a solution that pleases everybody. Now, where are we at right now? The league made its recommendation to clubs to go null and void, highly reluctantly, but it had to be based on the information available to us at that time. We don't know when lockdown is going to be lifted. Even when lockdown is lifted, we do not know whether what it will be replaced with. It's perfectly possible that we wind up going back into the tiered situation. And if we have a lot of clubs in tier four, We might have come out of lockdown, but we can't play football in front of fans anyway. So we just don't know. However, the important thing is that clubs' voices are being heard. A number of options were put forward. Those options included reviving last season's results. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and it will be a matter for the FA's legal department, but once you've expunged a set of records, whether they can effectively be revived or not. I don't know the answer to that. Another option that's been put forward is an alternate competition. And there have been accusations on social media that, quote unquote, the Northern Premier League never had a plan B. Wrong. We had plans B, C, D and E, each of which were shared with clubs going back before we kicked to football. But they were all predicated on us getting a reasonable number of games played. One of those contingency plans was to move to an alternate competition. Now, whether that's on a geographical basis or a cup competition doesn't really matter. But the issues with that are as follows. We don't know when we will be able to play football in front of crowds again. There is the issue of player contracts, which means that if we wind up starting the season or restarting the season later, then that could involve clubs in more player wages. You've also got the reality that says, as and when restrictions are lifted and people can go on holiday again, yeah, remember that, going on holiday?
Nope.
there'll be a whole pile of players, volunteers, who quite rightly want to go away for a break. The third factor in it is the, whether we like it or not, the qualifying round dates for the FA Cup next year are set in stone. Why is that? Because broadcasters pay a very large amount of money for the broadcasting rights to the FA Cup, which means that the first round proper of the FA Cup has to be played no later than the first week in November. That's non-negotiable. So there's a limited amount of movement there. If we had an alternate competition, clubs would then have to consider, which is why it's in the survey, whether that's sustainable for them. So we made it very clear within the survey that we believe that phase two crowds and secondary income through not just alcohol sales, but food and beverage and tea huts and all that caper is important. So there's that option in there. But we've also asked clubs, and this is the really crucial bit, what they think. So if there are other solutions, I'll give you an example, whether there might be a way to suspend this season rather than terminate it and to link it up with next season. But every single option has challenges. Just on that last one, if we did go down that line, somewhere along you've got to drop a season because effectively you'll be playing in the 2020-2021 league season and the 2021-22 FA Cup and FA Trophy. Now, once again, there will be those out there that say, oh, that's just a rule change. Rule changes take time because they have to go, whether people like it or not, they do have to go through a whole different set of levels within the FA. Some of them may be completely beyond our power. But the next point has to be to see what our clubs want. Is there any single option that is achieving a goodly level of support? Because my greatest fear with the survey, whilst I fully support doing the survey, is that actually it's inconclusive, in which case the decision will bounce back again to what the decision is with the FA Alliance Committee. It may well be that some more consultation is required, which is why I said slightly earlier on that there's no hurry to make this decision. So we need to see where it's all going. And so we're in a fast-moving situation. I don't know whether our number's going to go up, down, sideways. With so many people dying every day, sometimes we also have to keep all of this in context. Mm-hmm. One of the ideas that was suggested is wait till it's fully safe to do so. The problem with that, and you know, the sentiment is entirely correct, but what is fully safe? I've heard a number of scientists in recent days say that we might have to live with this for years. So So there comes a point where you have to say, right, the conditions that need to be in place for us to restart. What I do know is that there are lessons that have been learned from this. And that's not admissions of doing things wrongly, not necessarily. Even when you do things right, you should always review every decision and say, could we have done that slightly better? Could we have communicated it better? And we can always communicate better.
I mean, that was what kind of hinting at. I mean, the decision to... I mean, you mentioned the hindsight thing of, you know, I think we were about 10 games short or something like that, weren't we, at the end of last season? And funnily enough, we played 10 games this season. So it's tricky to say in hindsight what the right answer should be. But when we look to the future, how important is it not to make the same mistakes again and to learn those lessons that you spoke about?
I don't think football has a monopoly on that. I think it's like with everything in life, you always look back and say, OK, what are the learnings? What I do know is the Trident Leagues, together with the FA, we're convening a meeting very shortly in which we will look at exactly what the lessons are. But the difficulty is, as we said at the start, you're dealing with something where it's impossible to second guess what is going to happen. And I don't accept we should have predicted the second wave. If we go back to October, November time, it's the severity of the second wave. No one was talking about a third wave, and you can't second guess what government's response to these things is going to be. If you take a zero risk approach, then we won't be playing football anytime for the foreseeable future. And one thing I do know is that we want to play football. Players want to play, fans want to watch it. And my goodness, the club chairman want to get their businesses moving again. But there are other lessons in and around saying, and I personally, but this is not a view of the Northern Premier League, it's certainly not a view necessarily of the FA, but my personal view is that we need a set of emergency rules that can be taken off the shelf in the event of whether it's pandemic or whatever crisis that you can actually then pull down and make decisions a little bit more quickly. One of the good things that's come out of this is that, with the odd hiccup, the Trident Leagues have been very much on the same page with our decision making, which is the way it should be. We need to consider for when I say next season, I mean whatever, hopefully, whether September is next season, continuation of this season. We do have to look very seriously at midweek games. It is fact that from Hadrian's Wall down to Land's End, when you play a midweek match, your revenue reduces by 30%. So we absolutely need to look to reduce midweek travel. We need to be extremely mindful of the long-term impacts in terms of cleanliness, and I think that life generally will be very, very different. You know, thankfully, at this moment in time, we're not testing at this level of the game. If testing were to become mandatory, then I have great concerns around the cost of that, but let's park that to one side. So that there are lessons to be learned, and we also need to see how we might build in circuit breakers so that if we do need to stop, we need to be in a position to give more certainty around, all right, if there's a circuit breaker, it's going to be 4 weeks. It's going to be a maximum of 4 weeks, and then we re-look at it again. I totally appreciate the frustration of supporters of all clubs because they want to know what's going on. They particularly want to know what's going on when there's no football to divert their attention. And it isn't a deliberate failure of communication. It's simply not having necessarily anything to say that does not create an expectation we can't fulfil. In the NPL, I've always tried to write a monthly update for our club, the warts and all one, giving them as much information as I can. But there's a very, very good example, very close to home in the National League, of what can happen when you create an expectation that you can't fulfil.
Let's talk about how we get back underway, because like you say, I mean, it changes day by day. We're in the middle of a particularly nasty spike. You mentioned there's a possibility of going. It's now become the 2022 season, perhaps, so that's an option. But is there not a way of saying what the worst case scenario is and build a league season around that rather than go, we want to do home and away for everyone? Is it not? Because there's a good chance we might be here this time next year discussing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And again, you're back to the position of the least bad solution rather than the perfect solution. An option is to look at everybody playing everybody once. The difficulties with that are, however you then do that, it depends greatly on what the National League decide to do. They've already made the announcement that steps one and two are suspended for, I think it's 2 weeks. So ideally, we want a National League system-wide solution, but there's no getting away from a differentiation between, and I don't agree with it, but it's there, the elite and non-elite status. So that doesn't go away. So if every club was to play each other once, it still leaves you with a relatively small number or proportion of games that are played. We would need to know that promotion places are available in the National League should that solution be deployed. And I'm not saying that solution won't be. If that's a solution that the survey shows is preferred by a substantial number of clubs, then we will have to explore it. The other difficulty with it is that you still have a number of clubs that have not played everybody. So it's not as if we're at the halfway point. No. And across the NLS, Bury Town in the Eastern League have only played 4 games. At the other extreme, the maximum is, I think, 11. So you would have to look at a PPG mechanism from what we've played so far. You've got to write new rules around it because these days clubs tend to challenge things legally, and that is their right if they wish to do that. And that, of course, delays being able to confirm what the outcome will be. There is also the question of whether that's going to be sustainable from a club's perspective. And again, we'll see what the survey actually brings forward. The survey does contain a question in and around clubs' views on points per game. This is a difficult area also. Why? Because what we consider to be a fair number of games played at our level of the game may not be acceptable to the National League. Okay. More critically, even if the National League agreed with this, if it was not acceptable to the EFL, then the National League, understandably, their first priority, and I don't like speaking too much about another league because how they operate is entirely up to them, but it's very clear that their number one priority is to get their clubs promoted into the EFL.
I was going to say, though, Mark, I mean, that's basically the crux of the problem, really, because the first question I asked you was what's it like running, you know, one of the Trident leagues? And it's the difficulty is that all the leagues have a need to represent the clubs, their member clubs, not member clubs in other leagues. And that kind of is where I'm coming at it from, is the fact that surely the FA should be grabbing this by the scruff of the neck and saying, these are the rules, these are the way that you get promoted, and you have to accept them. And no further questions.
The difficulty with that, Ben, and I can understand why you would say that, but the difficulty with that is if you say these are the rules, then you're null and void. So there is no rule in the FA rulebook that says what number of games constitutes sporting integrity on a PPG basis. In exactly the same way is that mythical rule that football fans love when a game's called off. Oh, if it's called off after the 75th minute, the result stands. Great football myth. So every single one of the options and potential solutions needs rules to be rewritten, and quite rightly so. And that's why I'm pushing hard for a set of emergency rules that also build some, that actually create the ability for the Football Association. And what is the Football Association? People often assume that the Football Association is a bunch of old blazers sat in a room making decisions just to annoy people. The FA executive don't make the decisions. It's the committees that make the recommendations, which are ultimately approved by FA Council, which is what we know is representative of all football. So to take the scruff of the neck, what you're actually talking about is the leagues themselves, through the FA committee structure, taking it by the scruff of the neck. The rules as they stand don't permit us to do so.
But that then takes me to the fact that, you know, we were having this discussion last March and April time about, you know, how we conclude the season. And in the end, the option was to null and void it. We're looking at a second season where that's possibly going to happen. Should it not have happened in the summer then? Because if it happens once, it could have happened again.
Yeah, but again, 2 points. I think if we... It'd be wise after the event is extremely easy. Then lessons to be learned. There is an argument that says that we should have put things in place last summer. My God, there were enough meetings to discuss it, that's for sure. What would those learnings have been? And the difficulty is, if you've ever tried writing a football rule, it's in writing a rule that is clear, not open to challenge, but you've also got to get these things through AGMs and all the rest of it. So all of which is very, very boring for the average fan, but actually it's a reality of life for us. So could we have learned some lessons? Yeah, I think it's fair to say that we could have done. Could we have avoided this year? No, I don't think we could. We could have made it easier. That's without a shadow of a doubt. And the Trident Leagues were making it very clear right the way back to the summer as to some of the things we wanted to be built in as contingencies for an awful lot of reasons that I can't go into. That didn't happen. But yeah, there's lessons to be learned.
Because I remember asking you, I mean, how do we avoid this again? And you said the Trident Leagues are pretty much on the same page here about what needs to happen. With regards to those lessons being learned, is your expectation then that surely now we're facing this and now the National League are almost now in the same boat as Step 3 and below, that there will be movement with regards to this and we will have the fail-safes needed to prevent this from happening again?
I think there's no, without a shadow of a doubt. But let's also look at what has changed in a year. What has changed in a year is any optimism that we had last March, April time, that let's get this out of the way and it'll all go away. Very few people were talking about second waves last March, April. And I think at that point, an awful lot of people were going, well, the worst case scenario is that we might just have to delay the start of next season. And I think it is very easy to slip into a mentality to go, we'll only do something about it when we absolutely have to. So I think that has changed. Now we're in a position whereby, again, there's more that we don't know than what we actually do. So without question, the lessons of have to be learned, and we need to ensure that when we go, whatever we do, though, Ben, whatever we put into place won't be perfect, because it will only take for something unforeseen to come about. But what we do have to do for our respective league AGMs is to have new rules to put in place that actually said in the event of a catastrophe, a set of emergency rules are drawn down. If we're unable to complete a season, then these things will happen. But even then, the difficulty is when you say we can't complete a season, what does that actually mean? In theory, if you have a shorter season than you are completing a season, to complete this year, we would need to go through the summer. There may well be that some clubs that say that they want to do that. So it is very, very difficult to actually put finite definitions on it. But there are certain things that we can do, certain things we must do, because we can't go through this a third year running.
Because you said March the 6th, there's a possibility that there might be this want by the clubs to say we want to carry on. If I can pick your brain, what is Plan E? Because I think that's where we are now, isn't it? If we intend to finish the season after March.
Well, there could be lots of different Plan E's. So if we can't restart by the 6th of March, by which time, of course, we will have had the results of the survey. And I can't understate how important that is. There were no done deals here. So the outcome of what the clubs and the clarity around what the clubs want, not just at our level, because Step 5 is really, really important here. So the challenge is going to be to find an MLS-wide solution, because you don't really want it to be piecemeal. If we can't start on the 6th of March, there's a big decision to be made in and around, could we realistically extend the season past the 31st of May? If you go past the 31st of May, pitches need 10 weeks to be able to be refurbished. Holidays, as I've mentioned, and giving the right level of preparation for FA Cup qualifying rounds. So there's a whole pile of challenges. Then there's, of course, the biggest one of all, which is player wages. So you've got all of that. And that's why it's impossible to say what Plan E is. But I would say Plan E is to be confirmed. And we can't really confirm what that's going to be until we see what the wishes of the clubs are.
Now, we've had this big chat about, you know, the rights and wrongs of it all and hindsight and foresight and all that palaver. But the truth is that, like we touched upon here, it's people's health. It's a international crisis, this. And football probably is the last thing most people are thinking about. And it is tough, all of this. And I suppose the most urgent thing and the biggest priority of yours and everyone else is to make sure that these clubs survive this and get through to the other end. I mean, how much is that in your thoughts at this time?
Constantly. Absolutely constantly. I think that, you know, with the help of, and I'm certainly not a government apologist here, with the help of things like the furlough system, you know, clearly player wages are the biggest area of cost in any club. But what you've actually got right now is effectively mothball businesses. So my biggest fear and the biggest threat to non-league football is that actually we lose people simply because, either in the case of some of our volunteers, a lot of whom are quite elderly, that they either fall away through illness, but also that there's a whole generation of fans who could simply go and find something else to do. Now, I think that's a clear risk. I actually also believe, although it sounds like a contradiction in terms, that when we are able to get fans in, people will be, they'll be only too delighted to get back to all the good things for mental health and physical health that football actually brings. But the longer it goes without having competitive football, then the greater the risk that people will simply drift away. And I think that's a huge risk. So from a sustainability, that's really important. On it isn't complete doom and gloom. It is 75% doom and gloom. But what's actually been really pleasing is through our league sponsors, we've actually launched the Trident Community Foundation, which enables clubs to draw down grant funding, limited in its first year, admittedly, for community-based activities. And we've received over 10 applications so far for that. So if we can find a way to channel funds to enable clubs to maintain their community links, that will help with sustainability as well. But go back to where we started. The two biggest things, or the three biggest things, we have no control over. Can we play competitive football? Can we get people coming through turnstiles? Can clubs get secondary revenue? We have absolutely no control over that. Therefore, we have to be reactive. And given the government number of government U-turns that we've seen, not necessarily in football, but in all aspects of life, it's a brave man that says, we are going to do X, Y, Z. You paint yourself into a corner, and the same people that then criticise for failure to give clarity will be the same people to go, you shouldn't have done that then, because it stopped you doing this now.
Well, I'm going to end the interview, Mark, on a positive note. And I mentioned earlier about the cup runs FC United had and Marine. We can throw in Basford United's youth team as well. They've played Blinders this year, haven't they?
Yeah.
And all the community work that goes on at various clubs too. It's quite remarkable, I have to say, that despite everything that's gone on, we're still talking about the possibility of the season continuing rather than a total collapse of the non-league system. So I suppose that's the positive side of all this, we've got hope and a future.
It's a funny thing, Ben. It's all about optimism. Now, whether that optimism is misplaced or not is another matter. But what we are all on the same page about is we all want to be back playing football. Football is about whether Billy Bloggins scored a hat-trick here or Fred Smith shouldn't have been sent off and so-and-so has been transferred from that club to that club. It shouldn't be about what leagues are doing. Inevitably, that's where we are right now. But as I said at the start, the decision that is made, whatever the outcome is, it'll be the outcome that we believe to be in the best interest of everybody. But I guarantee you, will it please everybody? No chance. That's the territory we live in.
And that means we could carry on this podcast because we could debate every decision to our heart's content, can't we? The rights and wrongs of everything. But Mark, a big thank you for walking us through all of that. Stay safe. And when we've got more news, we'll catch up with you then.
My pleasure, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Northern Premier League chairman Mark Harris there joining us here on this week's Pitching In NPL show. And that's it for this week's edition of the Pitching In NPL show. A big thank you to Mark for joining us this week. Remember, for all the latest goings-on from the world of the Northern Premier League, you can visit the website www.thenpl.co.uk. But I've been Ben, and you make sure that you all have a lovely and safe week, and you'll be hearing from us again soon. Bye-bye.